Welcome to Paddling Adventures Radio. I'm Sean Rowley, and with me is Derek Specht.
Hello.
How's it going, Derek?
Fantastic.
You are nice and relaxed and recuperated and rested.
No, I'm not.
You had a great time.
I did that.
So how did your hiking, camping, family, first time trip go?
Well, it went really good. It did go really good, but I have a canoe packing mentality, not a hiking packing mentality.
Right.
So we did carry a lot of extra stuff, but there was nothing that we brought that we didn't use. I think some of the, me and Siobhan both debated the camp chairs. It's like, well, we're hiking. Do we need camp chairs? But you know what?
Did you bring big ones or did you bring like the
small Helinox style? Yeah. And so they're very light, but it's four of them. Yeah. But it's so the comfort level after a long day hiking to actually lean back. And it's like, well, I guess I could lean back against a tree on the ground, but yeah, it was nice having them and nobody complained about having them. And anyways, it was with the weight distribution. There's four of us carrying stuff and yada, yada, yada. So it was...
Oh, they all carried the same amount as you?
No, I had... we weighed everything when... pardon me. We weighed everything when we got back. We should have weighed all the stuff before we left.
You think?
Yeah. But so Stella carried all the food. So her pack continuously got lighter and lighter and lighter. And so I would, slip extra stuff into her bag.
As one does.
Yeah. And it's like, well, she's carrying all the foods. I guess that means she's carrying the kitchen. So there goes the stove. And
right.
So, and there was only on the second day she complained about the weight, but she had extra weight plus an extra water bottle because we needed water for hiking. So we made all the water in the morning on the third day or before the third night, we did make water halfway through just so we didn't have to carry water at the first. Mm-hmm. So we knew that there was a place we could make water. And, so we did have only like 2 liters for the first couple hours and then we made water and then we filled up and yada, yada, yada. But it was, it went well. It's, I'm used to portages, but I'm not used to, like the distances between lakes don't include the distance from the jump off point to the tee in the path to the next tee in the path, then to the campsite. So like it says, 6.5 kilometers. So that's not too bad, but no, in total, because we measured it because Siobhan uses All Trails. Like day one was like 9 kilometers. Day two was 11 kilometers. Of course, it'd be 11 kilometers only back because we backtracked and then it was 8.5 again or whatever. So it was a lot of walking. And Siobhan doesn't like the downhills because it hurts her knee. I don't like the uphills because I have weak legs. I've always been bad with hiking. Anyways, it was...
Well, that's what surprised me that you were going.
Well, it's something new for the kids, right? So right. I have to do it if I'm going to make the kids do it.
No.
No, no. Next time it's Siobhan and Stella. They can enjoy it on their own.
Next time you just send the kids.
Yeah, you're on your own.
Path is up that way. Good luck to you.
And they were fast too. Like they would bolt ahead because Beckett's just got some air mattresses and some pillow, like inflatable pillow things, and so he doesn't have much weight. He had the bag of trail mix and whatever, but so he was lightly loaded. Stella had the kitchen, and then it was getting lighter and lighter, so the two of them just bolted like gazelles. It's like, mm-hmm. Where are the kids? So we had to tell them to, hey, when you get too far ahead, you have to wait and stop and wait for us. So they would bolt ahead and then lounge for a few minutes till we got up. And as soon as we got to them, they bolted again. So it's like, where's our rest stop?
Right?
Like we'd be coming along and they'd be laying on the side of the trail. And
Dad, why are you so angry? Shit up. Yeah, I would lay on the side of the trail, but I just wouldn't get back up.
So yeah, it was a bit of a challenge, and it was a lot of work, But it was, the weather was great. It was warm. It was pretty hot out. So it was like this constant melting of sweat pouring down you constantly, right? It was there's areas where there's humidity, so your sweat wasn't evaporating, so it wasn't cooling you off. But the kids and Siobhan handled it very well. Everybody had fun. It was a good challenge. Technically, we didn't do a lot of distance.
Yeah.
Like, I think overall is about 40 kilometers total, right? So, maybe 38 kilometers, maybe 39. I don't know. Anyways, it just kind of brought me back because we both talked about, and I got to talk to him about it, but David Lee in the winter did that trail, the whole loop, in 76 hours. And I'm pretty sure he did it nonstop. So he had food. He had some emergency bivy in case he had to stop. And he just hiked it 24/7. And
really? Didn't stop? I thought he slept.
I don't know if he did or not. This is what I got to ask him about. I need to reach out to him and say, did you do that without stopping? Or did you stop for short periods of time at night?
And have snoozes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it would be cold. As soon as you stop, you're just going to start to freeze up.
Well, it depends on your bivy sack and
yeah, it depends on what you had with him. Right? But as I recall, he just had a small backpack. It's like, it doesn't look like it was a picture he took of himself. He didn't have a big pack.
Have to Google it.
Yeah.
Or just reach out and touch base
with him. Yeah, I'm going to touch base with him. So, yeah, it's like we did such a short portion of it. It's like, how the heck did he do this in 76 hours?
Right?
It seems impossible.
By himself.
I know. He had to jog the whole way.
Well, and if he didn't have very much equipment,
yeah,
that makes it easier too. But yeah, backpacking's not my cup of tea.
Yeah, it's the uphills kill me. They I don't have the legs for it.
Tracy doesn't like the downhills either.
Yeah, I was talking to Tracy when I first got here. She's saying she doesn't like downhills.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's, I don't know. We do it again. We plan on doing it again because it's an interesting, different way to see some backcountry and whatnot. So nice campsites. All the campsites had decent fire pits and thunder boxes and so on. It's still a shame that so many people don't use the Thunderbox. I don't know why.
Yeah.
Like, there was a lot of toilet paper flowers everywhere in the forest around the Thunderboxes. And
you figure they'd know.
Yeah. Well, I think for some reason, I think people just have this aversion to sitting on a Thunderbox. Like, yeah, sure, there's some flies flying in and out, but I don't know. And yeah, they do stink. You just have to get within 10 feet of them to smell them.
But
it's what they're there for, right?
Yeah. Because there's nothing like going in the back to look for wood.
Yeah, I'm looking for firewood. It's like, what? Look, hey, whoa.
Finding pile after pile. Yeah. That's
Come just on. Gross. Now there's all these landmines I have to watch out for. I have to think about where I'm walking.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, that's not right.
See any wildlife?
We saw, it was the biggest group of loons at one spot I've ever seen.
Really?
8 of them all together. And I recorded them. And then played the recording back to them, which got them hooting and hollering again. So there was 8 of them. I think it was the parents with all the babies.
Right.
They're just, anyways, it was interesting because they're out there playing and hopping and having fun. You could see they knew each other. They knew each other well. They were playing with each other and hooting and hollering. And so it was kind of cool. But other than that, we saw loons. We saw red squirrels, lots of birds, saw lots and lots and lots of birds.
It's always a good thing.
Yeah. So, but nothing bigger than a loon. Nothing.
Shame.
We saw lots of moose poop.
But no moose attached to.
Every single one of our campsites had like a pile of moose poop. It's like, oh, look out.
Maybe they're waiting for you to leave to show up.
Yeah, maybe. Well, none of it was warm. It was all dried. So it was old moose poop.
Did you see any other people?
Oh, yeah. Tons of people, yeah.
Really?
There was the trails. We mostly saw people either passing by our campsite or on the trail. Like, we saw groups of people. When we came out on Monday, we had a whole bunch of people passing us going the other way. Probably about 20 different people in a bunch of different groups, like a dozen different groups.
odd going in on a Monday.
Yeah, so I was thinking about that. It's a long ways in. We were coming back out of. I assume if they're going in, they're in for the week.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they're doing the whole loop. I don't know. But yeah, so we saw a bunch of people on the way in on the Friday. But when we left on the Monday, when we got to the car, that parking lot was jam-packed full. Like, there was a lot of cars. There's like three empty spots, right?
Yeah.
There was a lot of cars there. Like, they were parked all along the edges, plus there's a whole row of cars down the middle of the lot.
Well, you got to think, going on a Monday, you know people are coming out.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? So you have a good chance of...
Of getting a parking spot, exactly.
Getting a parking spot, getting camps. Do you have to... Is it first come, first serve, or do you have to book by site?
Book by site. We book by numbered site.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a good thing, sort of.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, exactly. So we knew what site we were getting.
Right.
And we didn't have to... We did look at other campsites just out of curiosity. Hey, next time we're here, we should get this one.
Well, I mean, if you're judging, you can go from here to here.
Yeah.
And then if somebody's already there, and the next one's another 6 kilometers away.
So there were lots of emergency sites, and they're well marked as emergency sites. So we probably passed or took a peek at 5 different emergency sites.
Okay. So you wouldn't have been.
Yeah, you know, we would have been put out. If we had an issue, if there was weather issues or we had to stop, it's like... Every cluster of campsites had an extra campsite or two that were labeled emergency site.
Right. That's cool.
So, yeah, there was no risk if we were put out. So, we, like, on one of the campsites, the campsite we had looked huge. And then it's like, oh, there's another sign. So, we look over and it's sort of an emergency site and a campsite. In 2-in-1, but it's a really big space.
Right.
So, and a thing that I found was weird, and we found it weird if we saw that other people found it weird too, because we apologized to people and they apologized back on other sites, is the trail pretty much goes through campsites.
Really?
Like we were within 2 or 3 feet of a group of people packing up, getting ready to go, and on our last night, the campsite we had on our last night, we were 18 inches from the trail. So if people had passed by, they would have just, because we're in a big bug tent, they would just have to look down and see these 4 people. Hello.
Well, I don't know something every day.
Yeah.
Reaching out, grabbing their feet as they pass.
Yeah.
Hey.
Yeah. Schwan's like, well, I guess I'm not changing in camp. Because there's nothing hiding anything in the tent. It's just a big bug tent, a big tarp with bug netting.
Yeah.
So.
And that did you well?
Views. Oh, yeah. It did fantastic. The views at night, like we could see the moon, we could just look out, we could see. It's great access for us to see out and great access for bears if they want to eat us.
And they're right on a trail, so it's like a drive-through.
I said, Beckett. I was trying to get him to wake up and look because a red squirrel, I could hear the red squirrel on the tree. So I opened my eyes, I looked up. It was just an early dawn and it wasn't mad or chirping it, you know how?
Yeah, chittering.
It's like, oh, he's angry. No, he was crawling around the tree, and he hopped over to the wall of the tent about a foot away, sat on his hind feet, and looked at Beckett's head. And he was there for a while looking.
You can tell he's nuts.
And then he moved over a couple inches, moved back a couple inches, and I was like, Beckett, look. And he wouldn't wake up. He was dead asleep. It's like, oh, you missed it. Red squirrel was looking at you.
And you didn't have your phone?
No, I didn't. I didn't want to move too much because it would have scared him away, right? But I did eventually go reach for the camera, and by that, as soon as he saw me move, he'd gone. So
shame.
Mm-hmm. It would have been neat to catch him staring at Beckett.
See?
But we got a few good pictures. Of the campsites are nice. We got pictures of sunrises, sunsets, and there was a red moon on the last night, and it was nice. It was a decent trip, and everybody had fun. It was, I'm still feeling the pain from it.
Yeah.
Like the muscles are complaining. If I sit down for like more than an hour at a time, when I get up, I'm limping wherever I'm going for the first 12 steps. Hey, what happened to you? Oh, nothing. Just I'm old. I'm taking time to get back into shape.
So would you have enjoyed it more if you had been able to half you paddle in, the other half hike in? And not have to carry all the gear?
No, I did appreciate being with the like it would on a future trip. I do want to go on just individual trips with just one of the kids,
right?
On different trips, like you used to do with yours. But I did appreciate being there for the first time that we did a hiking trip, and right. And it went well enough that if we geared down to a proper level, I'd like to go and do the Lacroix with them or something like that. So I think that would be nice.
I think when you're getting to that level, everybody needs to up how much they're carrying. So it's not absolutely on one or two yep. people, right?
And we would need proper packs because nobody had a proper pack. So Stella had a small yellow Eureka. I had a large yellow Eureka. Beckett had a waterproof it's just a small backpack, but no waist belt.
Mm-hmm.
And Siobhan had a Kevin Callan pack.
Okay.
So they're all canoe packs. And we weren't the only ones. We saw a few other people. I had a conversation with somebody and said, well, you know, I'm not going to buy a backpack just
for Well, and that's exactly
it's what you have. Right? It's what you have. So yeah. If I was going to do anything more adventurous, I would buy a proper backpack.
So when you go do your trips in the mountains, when you're doing the yeah. Adirondacks,
mm-hmm.
What did you use?
I have a Jack Wolfskin backpack.
Okay.
But I preferred the canoe pack because I could jam a lot more stuff in it.
Right.
And so we could carry a lot more stuff. Like our sleeping bags are not ultralight sleeping bags, mm-hmm. so they take up a lot of room. The chairs took up a lot of room. Whatever gear we had, we did minimalize clothing. And so we had very minimal amounts of clothing, so like just some spare stuff in case we got wet, in case it rained or whatever, right? But otherwise, it was like in my pack, I had all the miscellaneous gear, the tent, the sleeping bags, clothing bags, and I was at about 45, 50 pounds without yeah. water.
It's amazing how much sleeping bags, clothes, and a tent,
oh, yeah.
a shelter,
oh, yeah.
take up.
Yeah.
And then throw in some food, throw in
yeah.
a stove and stuff like that.
Exactly.
It piles up so fast.
Like food, you can get away with if you do a lot of dehydrated, but I wanted, if we were going to be working, I wanted everybody to have a decent meal. So mm-hmm. first night, so I always make this vegetable medley of, you know, there's little tiny potatoes and beans and peas and chunks of onion and chunks of pepper and, you know, balsamic vinegar and some spices and just cook that all on in a pan on open fire, right? And then, so we had that two nights. And plus, first night it was marinated chicken. And on the second night was steak.
Right.
Like nice big steaks. Yeah. The marinated chicken, it had marinated for a few days, then we froze it. Anyways, it had to cook the vegetables, and then it was the first night we had chicken, because chicken has to go right away. So the chicken was still a little frozen in the middle. So the outside cooked way early, the inside not so much, so we had to wait, and by the time it was done cooking, the outside was very well cooked. And because it was marinated...
We call that burnt in our house.
It wasn't burnt, it was just very well done. And Beckett was peeling it off and going... This is really good. It's like jerky. It's like, oh, you little bastard. It's not jerky. It's burnt. But he's
it's two meals in one. Chicken jerky with chicken inside.
I know. But he liked it. He kept on if there was some extra and he wanted more. So he liked the chicken jerky.
See? There you go.
Choke you.
Do you want chicken or do you want chicken jerky for dinner? So you cook it and he gets all yeah, the chicken jerky.
He gets
jerky.
All the burnt ends.
Right? That's yeah. awesome.
But he had no idea what he said, but it was funny because we talked about it later when the kids were way up ahead in the trail because I didn't want them to hear us making fun of them or stuff like that. But it's like, and so another thing, we talked about the kids all the time when they were running off. And it'll come in like there's some topics we have in a couple future episodes that that come in here, and one of the things I found good, like with Stella, is she would hop up and just do stuff without asking.
Right.
And so I knew I'd be looking at something and thinking, I'm not going to ask her. I'm going to see what happens. And she would hop up and just do stuff. And not very often, unless it was something that she wouldn't have thought about, that would she not get up and do something. And Beckett, he was more on the playing side, but as soon as you asked for something, he'd do it. So they're good and reliable camping partners.
Right.
So I've camped with all kinds, and I really appreciate that when your team gets together and all the little things just happen. You don't have to ask for things to happen. It just happens. And so it was like, it would be routine. I'd go in and set up the bug tent, and then the kids would run in all on their own unprompted, and they would, you know, lay down the ground tarp and put out the air mattresses and lay out all the sleeping bags and inflate all the pillows and stuff like that. And then arrange all the gear. And while they're doing that, I'm preparing a meal or I'm making water or something. And Siobhan is setting stuff up and organizing stuff. So it works well around camp.
Everybody's got their jobs.
Everybody's got their jobs.
But exactly. The kids know they've got to go home with you and they got to live with you.
Yeah. But what's interesting is, as long as I've been camping with them, I haven't set up a tent. Like, I set up the tent, but I don't do air mattresses. I don't do pillows and sleep bags. It just happens. And it's like, geez, I hope I remember how to do this on my own.
Right? No, I mean, when we took our kids out on canoe trips and stuff, there was the same deal. There were certain things that they just automatically did because that sort of became
their job. Thing. Yeah, their duty, right? Their task. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, if you can get to that point, then everything's pretty good.
Yeah. And Beckett's interested enough that he's like, if I'm about to do something, he'll interrupt and he'll say, oh no, can I do that? Like lighten the fire or whatever. Or
swinging the axe. And
I don't bring an axe. But we chopped up wood. They were both using a little handsaw and cupped up pieces of wood because we had to cook over fire. So, and thankfully there's no fire ban. Because
they're starting.
When I left work on the Friday, on the way out, a guy said, oh, banker's hours, huh? Because I had took half the day off. I said, no, I'm going camping. Oh, where are you going? I said, Algonquin. Oh, you better check. There's some in Northern Ontario. There's a lot of fire bans starting. It's creeping down towards us.
Yeah, Halliburton.
Like, oh, no. And this is funny. I called the West Gate. And you get through that voicemail thing where you're listening for 10 minutes waiting for somebody to pick up the phone or go to voicemail. And so it finally went to voicemail. I heard the beep, then I hung up. It's like, I'll figure it out because I couldn't find anything online. I went to the website, didn't say anything about fire ban. So as I'm going to the grocery store after work to on the Friday morning to go pick up the last few minute things, the phone rings and it's like, somebody's calling me from work. I pick it up. I said, hello. And she goes, hi, it's whatever from the West Gate. And it's like, oh, I didn't even leave a message.
Yes, that's why we're calling you, you ingrate.
But she called me back. It was so impressive. And so I just went into my spiel. I said, yeah, I heard there were some fire bans and my whole meal plan for the weekend will have to change if there's a fire ban. Is there anything in Algonquin or going to be in the Western Uplands and yada, yada, yada. And she says, no, currently there's no fire bans and so on. And I mentioned, oh, that's great because I've got a whole bunch of chicken and steak for night one and two with a bunch of veggies. So she goes, okay, what campsite are you on? And I froze. I was like, I'm in my head, I'm thinking, why?
She's showing up.
And then she says, I just want to know how long of a walk it is for me for coming for supper. So that was funny. That was nice. A nice little interaction. But so.
So at the end of the day, good time had by all.
Oh, it was awesome. It was really good. It was like, I'm going to feel it for a few more days. Siobhan's going to feel it. The kids are going, are we going to feel pain? It's like, you're young little.
Oh, you are in 5 seconds. You don't get out of my reach.
But it's, I do have sore muscles. I'm travel sleeping because of the sore muscles, but you know what? I'll get over it. But it's a good memory overall.
If you're going to do this again, let me know. So I can come up with a good excuse why I can't go.
I need to know ahead of time so I can say no.
Oh, I got a perm appointment. Get my hair done.
Yeah.
Good. I'm glad everybody had a good time.
Yeah, it was really good.
Seemed to live up to what you were hoping it would be.
Yeah.
Except
for the pain. I kind of had a premonition about what it was going to be like because I've camped with these kids a lot. So it was as per expected. I didn't expect them to be like gazelles on the trail.
Because, oh, they always
because,
are.
Because like, as soon as they get going, it's like, where'd they go? Are they running?
You got to put leashes on them.
Yeah. Exactly.
Good.
Yeah. So it was really good. It went really well.
Yeah. Definitely have to let me know how your next one goes.
Yeah. We'll see.
Because I won't be there.
If I do the cloche with them, I'll have to buy backpacks because we don't have proper hiking backpacks for the kids and for Sean. I just have one for myself.
Well, and it makes things a lot easier when everybody's decked out properly, right?
Exactly.
Now, I will say something about the chairs.
Yeah.
Everybody that's I know that says, oh, you know, I won't even bring a chair. I'll just sit on the ground and stuff.
Yeah.
That's awesome until the rain starts.
Yes.
And there's nothing to lean against.
You're just standing all the time.
And then you're standing all the time or you're laying down because you can only sit up without a back rest for so long.
It's
not like you're going to be resting against the tree because the water's that's either where the tarp is and the water's coming straight down,
exactly,
or the tarp's not covering, and so you're over somewhere. But the smaller chair is definitely something I never
It's quite a luxury item, but I do prefer to have them on the trips, and with that trail in Algonquin, all of the campsites have log benches, but nothing to lean against.
Right.
Right.
Well, when we did the trip following the book, The Incomplete Anglers, and we were, because of the bugs, we were in that bug tent. So I'd say, I'm not going to have a tent or a chair.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to put my back against a tree or something.
Yeah.
Oh, I wish I had a chair every single time.
Did I bring one? I can't remember.
Yes.
I did bring one.
Yes.
I like my chair. I like leaning back. It gives you an opportunity to relax your core muscles.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And not lay down.
Exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, if you're
tired, you
got to lay down in a tent. It's like, well, I don't want to lay down in the tent. I want to look at the birds and this, that, the other thing.
Yeah. So. Or have a decent conversation and be able to face the person.
Yeah.
Right?
Don't mind me yelling from inside the tent.
Cool.
Yeah.
Do you remember we were talking about boat inspections? We're talking about Alberta talking about doing the
they're going to try something new
stuff. But we also talked about, you know, you've got to do the boat inspections and there's close to the borders and stuff like
that. Okay, yeah.
So happened to be on the socials there and somebody posted in one of our local kayaking groups. And like it sort of hit home because we were just talking about this, but didn't know anybody that's actually been affected by it. He says, if you're traveling across the country, keep an eye out for boat inspection sites. This may include kayaks and canoes. Found out today that Alberta takes their boat, kayak, canoe inspections seriously to prevent the spread of invasive species in their lakes and rivers. I unknowingly went past an inspection site and was escorted back by police to have my kayak inspected and spared a $4,200 fine.
Whoa.
I don't know if it was $4,200 or if that was a typo because I couldn't find anything about the fines.
That seems steep.
I'm hoping that's a typo.
$420?
And it's actually $420.
Mm.
If you're planning to travel with your kayak, keep your eyes out for inspection sites. So they got a sticker that was stuck to their boat, and it just says AIS inspected, and then it had like a number, and then the date 2025. They also received a certificate that says their watercraft was inspected, and on the bottom of the certificate it says, the law still requires you to stop at any inspection station you encounter, regardless of possession of this certificate. So if they were to pass another one,
they still get fined
100 kilometers down the road.
Yeah.
They have to stop in at that one too.
And show them proof that, hey, I've already been inspected.
Stopping at open watercraft inspection stations is mandatory for all watercraft in Alberta as per section 33.33 of the Fisheries Act, Alberta, and ministerial order 30, 2015. This certificate documents that this watercraft has been inspected at the time and safe note and indicates what mitigating actions were taking if necessary. So they are out there, and I don't know, maybe you just, if you're not looking for them, there's a good chance you're going to miss it.
Yeah.
So, but at least they brought them back and said, you know, hey, and, you know, oops, sorry.
Just an FYI.
Yeah.
So I imagine if he must have been nice to the police.
Yeah.
Because if he was being a jerk, the cop would have said, I guess you're getting a fine.
Yes, you're getting a ticket. if you're heading out and you want some information, you can call Alberta's 24/7 invasive species hotline, 1-955-336-2628 or 336 boat. BOAT. But yeah, that's the first one I've heard, because we knew we've talked about this a few times.
Yes.
That they were doing this. And that's the first person I've heard of that's actually come across one. And yeah, they, I guess they inspected the boat, disinfected it, cleaned it, and all that sort of deal. So
yeah, they're pretty serious about it. Like,
they have to be.
So there's already invasive species out and about, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's whatever plant is out there that's invasive right now in Alberta, but they really want to avoid any zebra mussels, and they want to protect some of their bigger waterways.
Yep.
It's expensive. Once you, like, zebra mussels in Ontario, I think it's between $500 and $800 million a year cost to, like in the industries.
Yep. Well, that's what they were saying in Alberta, $500 million a year.
It's expensive.
Yeah. Hmm. So you go from that warning to over in the UK, boaters and paddlers have been warned about an increased risk of falling branches following recent heat waves. Paddle boarders in particular have been told to watch for potential dangers of sudden branch drop. Darren Reeve, who runs Norfolk Paddle Meetups in Norwich, said, "We check for tide and weather, and now when we're paddling, we pay attention to the trees." The Broads Authority, which runs national parks in Norfolk and Suffolk, said the dry spell followed by heavy rains is likely to have led to some trees and branches becoming unstable. Mr. Reeves said he was advised by the Norfolk Broads Ranger about the potential hazard. "It sort of woke us up really as coaches that when you do your safety briefings, none of us ever talk about looking up."
Hmm.
Which, yeah. Who does,
because
really, right?
It's just the birds up there.
Yeah. Yeah, if we're going down a river, we're looking up to see birds, but we're not looking up thinking a tree's going to fall on us or branches are going to fall on us. After that, I thought, hang on a minute. We run for cover when it's raining. We get under the trees. And that has changed our minds, because you're going to get no warning and it can just crack and go, he says. "I've said to my group that when we're paddling, anything that is overhanging or just doesn't look right, just avoid it slightly, go around it, take note of your surroundings." In Norfolk, recently, a large willow tree tumbled into the river near Whitefriars Bridge in Norwich, and Holcombe Park has warned visitors about some incidents of sudden branch drop. Sounds like an epidemic. The ants are getting you.
But the odds of a branch actually falling on you, I think, are pretty slim. But you still
better
want
be safe than sorry, right?
Get a bonk on the head,
right? Slim, you say? Who are you calling slim? Rory Hobbs, managing director of RH Tree Consultants in Thetford, said sudden branch drop is not fully understood. There are lots of theories out there, mostly to water quickly flushing through branches and extending cells quickly, he says. What we do have a good understanding of is the trees that are susceptible to it, particularly oak, sweet chestnut, and beech, and to a lesser extent, ash, poplar, willow, horse chestnut, and elm. Tends to impact mature trees more, and failures tend to occur on long, drawn-out, horizontal branches. But he stresses the risk is exceptionally low. Again, better to be safe than sorry. Because you're going to be that low exception with that massive branch coming down in the middle of your stand-up paddleboard, whacking you on the head.
There was one campsite that we're at where we actually tied the hammock to the tree. And as I'm tying the hammock to it, it's like, hey, come look at this. She goes, what? I said, look at the cracks. And so the whole tree was leaning against another tree right over top of our tent.
Awesome.
So, but the other tree was holding it.
For now.
The other tree had it, this dying tree in a loving embrace. Wasn't going to let it fall. But eventually.
In the middle of the night. As the bear is about to get you. Yeah,
exactly.
The tree beats him.
Yeah. So, it's not just branches. It could be entire trees.
Could be an entire tree. The Broads Authority has asked people to report any unmarked tree falls which are causing a hazard. Of the risk of sudden branch drop, a spokesman said, the prolonged dry spell earlier this summer, combined with recent heavy rain, is likely to have had led to some trees and branches becoming unstable. Although it is very rare for there to be incidents, we urge boaters and paddlers to remain cautious when traveling under tree cover. Stay out in the sun. Get burnt. Get burnt.
Keep an eye above your head. Just watch it. As you approach a tree from a distance, as you come around a turn, it's like, oh, I better look up, see if there's anything loose.
Well, and I think if, you know, if it's nice and calm air, chances are it's not going to be. But once the wind picks
up. If you're in a windstorm, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. I'm not hanging out under there.
Because, like, you might have normal winds constantly on a tree. And then that weird, different angled wind could point in a direction the tree's not used to, and then it's susceptible, right?
Right down on your old melon.
Yep.
Let's stay over in the UK here. Maidenhead Canoe Club. Maidenhead is just west of London.
I was just going to go look on the map.
It's almost like a, I don't know if it's an actual... I guess it's a separate town, but it looks like it's part of like a subdivision of a connected sort of like you got Toronto, Scarborough, Pickering, Ajax, Whitby, Oshawa. It looks like, but it's right there. 10 new paddlers took to the Maidenhead Town Center waterways as they took part in a newly established canoe club's first taster session. So this is exactly why I looked at this one, the first taster session. I'm thinking, don't tell me you're getting new people out there paddling to some pub, and then paddling back for a taster session. Like, that's. Maidenhead Canoe Club has been set up by volunteer-run charity Friends of Maidenhead Waterways, which maintains a side channel of the Thames known as York Stream. Paddlers took to the waterway and had some fun trying out the boats. Then they paddled upstream to the town moor and back and passed a family of swans on the way. Having fun, getting used to it. Dominic Hurst, secretary at Maidenhead Canoe Club, said, there has been lots of interest in joining our new club. The first taster session went well, and we'll be holding more in the next couple of weeks so people can try canoeing. If people want to join the club, we will then offer a canoe and river skills course so they can learn the basics. Then people can join all our club activities, starting with club paddles on Monday evenings. The new club is affiliated with Paddle UK, which is the governing body of British canoeing. And the club's future activities will include group trips led by qualified coaches along the waterway to the River Thames and onwards toward Windsor and Marlow. So they're not too far from Windsor Castle either, right? And they have a £20 per year membership. Realistically, that's not a bad cost. And currently the club is open to adults, only open to adults. But if it becomes more popular, I'm sure it'll be younger people as they go. Access to paddles, boats, and buoyancy aids is included in the club membership. So number one, if you don't have all the equipment, you join the club.
Yeah.
You get used to the equipment.
Yeah.
Find out you like it. You join the club. You get the basic training.
Yeah.
So you can go out there and do it whenever you want. And go paddling on a local waterway.
And I think what's great, too, is when it comes to clubs like that, I was in a club, a kayak club out in Victoria, BC. You get to try different styles of paddles, different styles of kayak. They didn't have canoes, but if they did, I could have tried different styles of canoes. So it's a try before you buy type thing, right?
Right.
It's like, oh, I really like this sea kayak, or I really like this paddle. I like the way it handles. I like, you know, there's all kinds of things. And then you get to also try out, you know, different styles of like the drip rings or whatever on a kayak paddle. And, you know, if in the winter you get to try out the club's gloves for cold weather. And it's like, oh, I know exactly. No, I want to buy a pair of gloves like this. The you know, the paddle gloves that fit right on the paddle itself. So it's when you join a club like that, that's one of the fantastic things about it is, hey, I'm just starting out. I'm not going to spend thousands of dollars on this stuff. Let me see if it works out. Maybe I won't even like it.
Exactly.
Right?
Well, they have a bit of a secondary reason here.
Oh, okay.
And it goes back to the old, if you get them interested in their waterways, they're going to protect their waterways.
Oh, exactly. Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
So they say, we look after and seek to enhance the waterways that run from the Thames at Cookham through Maidenhead Town Centre and back to the Thames at Bray. These waterways were drainage ditches and channels, which we have restored to vibrant living waterways. The waterway supports biodiversity and wildlife and can be paddled in kayaks and canoes. Our work is done by volunteers. Oh, you mean the people that are paying $20 a year to become members?
Yeah.
Those are the perfect volunteers. because, yeah, once you're a member, you're going to want that those waterways to be kept.
Exactly. This is
so boom. You're volunteering some time.
I'm going to protect it.
In autumn and winter, we clear blockages from the ditches and streams to keep the water flowing. Through the year, we do maintenance, repairs, and little litter picks. We are also working with partners to enhance biodiversity along the waterway. This summer, we will be organizing activities on York Stream to encourage people to get on the water in a canoe or kayak. If you'd like to help, please join us.
Hmm.
So, yeah, once you become a member and you're enjoying it.
Yeah.
And because they have so many people that are interested in joining.
Who wants to volunteer this weekend? We're going to do this.
Hey, we're going to do this weekend. It needs doing. Who wants to pitch in?
Who wants to potentially get arrested when we protest something this weekend?
Right? So if you're interested, you can go to maidenheadwaterways.org.uk for a lot more information and contacts and all that sort of stuff. Yeah, that's how you get them hooked.
Yep.
Get them in there and you get them helping out and, you know, pride of ownership sort of thing, or stewardship, I guess it is.
There's a kitchen place here in Maidenhead.
A kitchen?
A kitchen place. Must be related to you. They've got your last name.
McAvoy and Rowley. It's probably Rowley.
Maybe. Maybe they pronounced it different.
We were down in Rowley, Massachusetts.
Oh, yes. Yeah, you told me about that.
But they came from County Rowley over in the UK. Back in the day. Way back in the day. Dragon boats. Dragon boats. World record.
Is it?
Ultra distance paddlers Josh Friedman and Julie Kirk have done it again. July, the duo earned their second Guinness World Record in as many years, completing a grueling 51-hour, 371-mile dragon boat expedition on the Missouri River. Could you imagine paddling a dragon boat for 51 hours?
If you've got enough paddlers, you could have one or two people take breaks and quick naps and...
I would probably take a 24-hour nap.
Let me know when we're done.
They now hold records for both the longest distance covered in a dragon boat in 24 hours and the longest nonstop voyage in a dragon boat.
There you go.
2023, Friedman and Kirk were part of a 16-member endurance team hand-selected by paddle racing legend Rod Price, a world record holder, author, and dragon boat coach. Dubbed the Pan Am Express, the team set out to take the a craft traditionally used for short sprints and push it to its extreme, paddling over 300 miles without stopping.
Oof. Wow.
If you need another volunteer for the next attempt at this,
don't call me.
Not one person on the team was a dragon boat paddler, said Kirk. We're all endurance paddlers.
Makes sense.
Used to double-bladed kayaking, not single-blade paddling. That year, they entered the famed MR 340, oh, okay, on the Missouri River. Yes, the Missouri River 340, aiming to beat the previous long-distance record by nearly 80 miles. But midway through the race, a severe storm forced its cancellation. First weather-related shutdown in the race's history.
It wasn't meant to be.
Still, the Pan Am Express walked away victorious, shattering the 24-hour distance record by paddling 200 miles. 90% mental, Friedman said, drawing from his 20-year career as a Navy SEAL. Well, that's cheating. Once you've gone through Hell Week, you'll understand what your body and mind are capable of. It becomes second nature to push through. After some well-earned recovery and winter training on the Kootenai River, sometimes barefoot in the frigid water, Friedman and Kirk got the call. Rod contacted us this spring and said, "We have unfinished business. We needed to get that farthest distance record." Five returning racers from the 2023 crew joined the group of new paddlers from around the globe, including Germany and Australia, for another go. Funny how they all didn't return.
Yeah, it would be tough, right? Some of them would be like, "I'm not doing that again." Again?
No. No. I'm sorry, wrong number. He's in the bathroom. I'll get him to call you back. Team filed in a tight formation on the slender boat side by side, a narrow, bone-bruising wooden seat. And that's the part that kills me, is the seats. They're not padded.
Yeah.
To brace for more than 2 days of continuous paddling. And you don't get to stand up and walk around. It takes intense focus, Friedman says. Music helps. Julie creates playlists to keep us grounded. And the scenery helps you stay present when you're in the moment and the time really flies. The expedition began 8 a.m. on July 8th. Crew rotated rest breaks every 30 minutes, row by row, allowing each pair a brief moment to hydrate, eat, and switch paddling size before returning to the rhythm.
Interesting.
So, how do two people in a dragon boat switch
sides? Carefully?
One wrong move.
Yeah.
And you just upset the whole apple cart. Yeah. That definitely would get me out of there. When you have your switch, you hurry up and take a drink of water or throw something in your face and eat it, Kirk says. Throughout the exhausting voyage, teammates leaned on each other mentally and physically.
Oh, hang on. So you can stop for eating and refreshments. But what about if you have to go for a poo or a pee?
You got to be holding that for 51 hours.
Do they mention that?
They do not. In a race that lasts days, everyone hits a low point. Someone's going to have back pain. Someone won't be able to stay awake.
Someone's got
to
have a poop.
Someone's got to hang over the side. You have to lift each other up because sooner or later, your time will come around when you'll need their help to get through something painful or hard. That's what makes team endurance racing different. You're never alone. So I got to think at some point, they got to have rest breaks. Pull over to the side, get up, stretch the legs. Do your business in the woods.
But they said it's nonstop. I think they're like pooing in a bucket. Pass the bucket. And you poo in the bucket.
And then dump it over the side.
I don't know that they'd want to be caught throwing it over the side. So they probably just poo in the bucket. And it's just like a thunderbox. A mobile thunderbox. And
you think one poop in the lakes or rivers is going to make a difference?
No, but they wouldn't want to get caught doing that because it would put shame
maybe
on them.
Maybe they did it at night.
But you know what I mean?
Like, people only pee at night.
Chances are they had a little porta potty that they would pass around. I got to go. Because 71
but if you're,
after 51 hours, after two full days, right, you're going to have a poo.
Not necessarily. I don't. When I'm backcountry and I'm really going hard on the portages and stuff like that. My body is burning through stuff so much.
Yeah.
Like sometimes it's like 2-3 days.
Oh, wow.
And I'm just like, oh, well, I guess I better just go sit to see. Not to be gross about it or anything, but yeah, my body totally changes. And when you're burning through that much sweat and everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. So yeah.
Beckett for our trip. It was 3 days or 4 days, three nights, sort of. Anyways, he didn't poo.
Yeah.
But within a half hour of getting home, I said, Beckett, have you... I'm going now! It's okay!
Out of the way! Yeah. No, my body shuts down, like, doesn't shut down, but it acts differently when I'm out there. Hmm. Especially when we're go sort of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I guess it just burns out all the... And I don't eat as much when I'm out there either.
I don't either. I eat less.
Yeah. The trail mix which just...
Which is completely opposite of what makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Is, like, I have to force myself to eat to keep up energy. So, because I'm just not hungry during physical activity.
Yep.
So.
As owner of Mountain Mike's Vitamin Shop, Kurt came well-stocked with remedies.
To make you not
poop. I had everything. Someone had an upset stomach. Here, take some papaya enzyme, she said. At pit stops. I knew there was pit stops. The Pan Am Express ground crew removed trash and refueled the paddlers with food and supplies.
So they did.
While they were over in the bushes.
It wasn't nonstop.
Well, I guess it was nonstop in the fact that they probably had like quick little timed, no more than 2 minutes or 5 minutes or something like that. After nearly two full days, the team crossed the MR340 finish line at the 46-hour mark, surpassing the standing record. But they didn't stop. Rod wanted the new record to be unbreakable, Kirk said, so we kept going 5 more hours. When they finally docked, the team had logged 371 miles in 51 hours, officially claiming the longest nonstop dragon boat voyage in history. Then came the crash. After 2 days awake, I was lights out, Friedman said. Julie's daughter, Maeve, drove us to Illinois. They were making dinner. I just laid down for a second. I passed out cold until morning. No dreams, just gone.
Yep.
After returning to Boundary County 2 weeks ago, Kirk was back at work at Mountain Mike's almost immediately. Friedman, meanwhile, said he had been taking it slow, walking, enjoying quiet recovery.
I'm said Derek. Life.
I actually feel better than I usually do after these, he said. It's amazing to achieve something like this, but it's eventually... But even more meaningful when you do it with friends. We had some incredible people on the boat, just phenomenal paddlers and phenomenal people. Yeah, like I say, you can't just go nonstop. I knew there was pit breaks, but they never said how long.
When they say nonstop, I just took it at its word as being nonstop.
Being nonstop.
But
you don't get off the water.
They did
get
rest breaks. Because I guess you have to accept the fact that the body does need certain things along the way. You have to go to the bathroom. You do need a moment to stand up and relieve, because you can't sit squatted paddling for 51 hours. You have to stand up and
Or maybe everybody was sitting on a bucket.
Maybe.
They had it pre-planned. Stand up and you got a bucket stuck to your butt.
There's a hole in every seat. You just have to let it go when you want to let it go.
Let it go. Let it go. Anyway, that's pretty cool that they managed in a dragon boat.
Yeah. Yeah.
I would not want to be part of that crew.
It's not very comfortable.
No. I would do that in a canoe,
but
in a dragon boat.
Yeah.
I think it's just like so narrow.
Yeah.
Now, how fast could they do that with a full complement in a snake boat?
Oh.
Which is even longer.
Yeah. Those things
are
crazy.
More people.
I've been watching some snake boat races recently.
The one with the kid on the front?
The kid's on the front.
Yeah.
And they're right in tune with the paddling, so you can see them rocking back and forth with the head like they look like they're a chicken and
doing a little dance on the front.
Once in a while you see the kid, he'll do a little spin dance and then jump into the water and it's very interesting.
Well, let's get a little closer to home here. Toronto, baby. 7 best places to stand up paddleboard in Toronto.
Well, it was one of them water?
Yes.
Huh.
I think they're actually all partly water.
Yeah.
There's a few of these where they talk about are pretty close to each other, too. So I'm kind of like, okay, whatever. When you think of summer sport, you might picture beach volleyball or swimming, but paddleboarding, especially stand-up paddleboarding...
Hmm?
Is there another type of paddleboard?
Yeah, I don't know.
Is an underrated full-body workout.
Is it?
It's not fast-paced, but it's really good for strengthening your core as you can constantly engaging your muscles to balance and propel forward. Toronto is a perfect city for this sport, offering amazing waterfront views and a mix of sheltered areas like Cherry Beach, open water spots like Scarborough Bluffs. And so here are seven places, the best places, to go paddleboarding in the Toronto area. Toronto Islands. I know Alan Drummond from Kingdom Outdoor. That's one of his most favorite places in the world to go kayaking. This is a great stand-up paddleboard destination for both beginner and intermediate paddlers. Expect a mix of charming city views and calm waters. So no pressure if you fall in. Launch from Hanlon's Point or Center Island. If you need a little guidance, Toronto Island Stand-Up Paddleboard provides lessons, rentals, sunset paddle outings, and stand-up paddleboard yoga experiences. And for people that don't know Toronto, Google Hanlon Point first.
Yeah.
Cherry Beach. This is where we usually launch from. The beach is sheltered on by Leslie Street Spit and offers I always want to say Leslie Spit's trio. The band. Leslie Street Spit and offers shallow, calm waters, so perfect spot for beginners. Enjoy skyline views, nearby food trucks, dog-friendly waves. If you're feeling confident, try paddling across the Eastern Gap into the islands. It takes about 10 minutes. So that's what we usually do. We launch there at the beach and then zip across the gap to the islands and back. It boasts the most incredible urban waterfront views. Q Balmy Beach. Blue Flag Beach is located just a few steps east of Woodbine Beach and boasts breakwalls that create calm paddling zones. So, again, great spot for beginner paddlers or anyone trying SUP yoga. It's clean and surrounded by tons of amenities like restrooms, playgrounds, nearby rental services. Head out at sunrise or sunset for the most stunning views. Humber River, and this is on the far side. For a quieter nature-filled paddle journey, head to the west end and explore the Humber River toward the Humber Bay Arch Bridge. Again, a lot of people kayak through there. Launch from Sunnyside Beach for a shorter paddle or Kings Mill Park for a longer route. Along the journey, you'll be surrounded by gorgeous tree-lined scenery, may even spot wildlife like beavers, blue herons, or deer. Toronto Adventures offers lessons and rentals for this route.
Nice.
Is Toronto Adventures the one that does the see-through kayaks as well?
Oh, I don't know.
Can't remember. Scarborough Bluffs. That's more towards us here. Bluffers Park sits at the foot of the Scarborough Bluffs, so you'll have an epic cliffside view while paddling. Start from the small beach near the park. Just keep a safe different distance from the bluffs due to erosion. It's all sand cliffs.
Mm-hmm.
More experienced paddlers can continue east toward the East Point Park for a more challenging paddle experience. Tommy Thompson Park. Head to the Leslie Street Spit again to explore the scenic wildlife-rich stand-up paddleboard route. You'll paddle through marshy water surrounded by coastal wetlands, so you'll likely spot shorebirds and other wildlife. Keep an eye out for submerged rocks along the shoreline, and lake conditions can also be kind of finicky. Yeah, Lake Ontario can spring up and be finicky.
Mm-hmm.
Sunnyside Beach. This is another beginner-friendly stand-up paddleboard location on the Lake Ontario waterfront. Located just west of downtown, you can rent paddle gear nearby before heading into calm waters protected by breakwalls. From here, try paddling upstream along the Humber River towards Etienne Brule Park, where you'll discover shaded, tree-lined waters and marshes. This route offers a quieter, more nature-rich paddle experience away from boat traffic. And if you are taking any of the ones that go to the islands, there's boats, there's party boats, there's ferries.
Traffic. There's a lot of traffic.
There's a lot of power boat traffic.
The ferries and the tugs are the ones you got to watch out for.
Yeah.
And then there's all the recreational boaters who most of them don't have a clue what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to be careful.
So if you are in Toronto looking for some places to go stand-up paddleboarding, Toronto Islands, Cherry Beach, Kew Balmy Beach, Humber River, Scarborough Bluffs, Tommy Thompson Park, and Sunnyside Beach. There's seven of them to get you started.
Hmm.
Awesome. And it all can't be peaches and cream, so Boundary Waters.
Mm.
Department of the Interior is drawing criticism from environmental advocates in Minnesota. Deputy Secretary Kate McGregor tweeted that the department will reverse a 2022 legal opinion that blocked federal mineral leases for Twin Metals near the Boundary Waters. Ingrid Lyons of Save the Boundary Waters called the announcement reckless, saying major decisions about America's most cherished wilderness shouldn't be made over social media.
I know, right?
She accuses the Trump administration of favoring foreign billionaires over Minnesota families, warning that reinstating the leases could put public lands at risk and undermine environmental protections. And so the battle starts again.
I'm not surprised, but I just sometimes just like, I can't believe we're here again.
Right? It gets...
And I question any company, like... For any company who is going to spend the money and invest in creating a mine, and are you not concerned that in a few years you're just going to be turned back around and told get out?
Right.
So you're never going to pull a bit of metal from the ground unless you like go whole hog.
Well, it's all about that potential shing.
Yeah, exactly. Right?
That's all they want. They want the money.
Hmm.
Gets tiring after a while.
It does. This back and forth for Boundary Waters has been going on far too long.
Yeah. Back to... We're going to Tampa this time. Teaching residents about waterways. Again, this gets back into the... If you get them interested in it, they're going to want to protect it and whatnot. Tampa Bay Waterkeeper's mission... is to protect the local watershed through community outreach and events. Leader of nonprofit Tampa Bay Waterkeeper believe hands-on activities can show community members why it's worth preserving the area's watersheds. One such way to do so, kayak trips.
Yeah, there you go.
Get these people out on the water. These kayak tours are a great way to get people out on the water so they can have this experience that they wouldn't normally have access to. Or just give them a different point of view. That's from Waterkeeper Program Manager Jordan Grard. If they don't actually see it, then they will never truly understand what they are protecting. Main goal is to teach everyday people why clean water is important for both humans and wildlife. Polluted water can affect physical health and contaminate food sources, she added. On these trips, Tampa Bay Waterkeeper staff educate guests on the different parts of the region's watershed, such as seagrasses, and why they're necessary for local ecosystems. For example, manatees, dolphins, young fish populations rely on seagrasses to thrive. Seagrasses disappear, the manatees disappear.
The
dolphins disappear.
Exactly.
Additionally, participants get to go through man-made mangrove tunnels within the preserve. That'd be cool. You can see all kinds of organisms throughout there, whether it's oysters, mussels, mangrove crabs, or different bird species. Clean water also affects people's livelihood. One in every 10 jobs here relies on clean water, and we have a lot of people that are directly influenced by the health of our bay, whether that's our fishing community or our science community. According to a 2023 Tampa Bay Regional Planning Council and Tampa Bay Estuary Program Report, the bay generates $32.1 billion in economic output.
That's a lot.
That's huge.
And that's worth protecting.
Yeah. Tampa Bay Waterkeeper has already hosted around 15 trips to Whedon Island. Gerard said... Events are planned bi-weekly to support the mission, including kayak trips at other locations such as Shell Key Preserve and Boca's Ciega Bay. This summer, the organization partnered with Florida Fantasy Fishing Camp to teach students about clean water and how to care for natural resources. Perfect time. You get them out there fishing and educate them on the waterways and all that, too. This allowed the young attendees to take those tools and the information home with them to put back in their local waterways. Throughout the year, the nonprofit participates in beach cleanup events and offers a patrol program where people can report issues such as oil spills, algae blooms, which we've been seeing a lot of. Manitoba yep. has a big one now.
Mm-hmm.
Sewage leaks, illegal dumping, or injured wildlife. Additionally, Tampa Bay Waterkeeper tests bacteria levels at 11 different sites around the region biweekly.
Wow.
That's a good thing. Data is available on the organization's website, tampabaywaterkeeper.org. So if you're interested, go there, tampabaywaterkeeper.org, and check them out and see about getting out with them.
Yeah, support them.
Learn some things, either and, again.
Support them in person or financially or yeah. however you may see fit.
And when people start getting out on these kayak trips,
yeah,
get them interested in the waterway and get if them you, to protect yeah, it.
Exactly. Nobody's going to protect something if nobody uses it, nobody even knows it exists. So the more people exactly. out and enjoying it, suddenly they fall in love with it. It's like, oh, this is worth protecting.
Right? Do it. Do it. That's all I got this week. You got anything else?
I've got nothing to add.
Except that you want to go home and have a snooze because I'm you're still tired.
Right now.
Sleepy.
I'm exhausted.
All right. Well, if you want to find out more information about us, you can find us at paddlingadventuresradio.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. You can download or stream all our episodes on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, Player FM, and all your favorite podcast downloading sites. Or you can just go to the episode page at paddlingadventuresradio.com, and you can stream or download all our episodes there. If you enjoy the podcast, please share it with your friends, family, and fellow paddlers. I want to thank everybody for listening this week. I'm Sean Rowley.
And I'm Derek Specht. We'll see you next time.